The city of Portland must act and ensure its residents have access to just representation by funding a universal representation program, because it ensures fairness by preventing deportation and disrupts the administration's unfair immigration crusade. While we are witnessing a crisis because too many of our community members have been detained and deported without representation. This problem will only continue to grow because the city is home to 27,000 undocumented immigrants. Legal representation funding is necessary and key to keeping our community together. The lack of representation results in the majority of Oregonians in removal proceedings that are deported. Conversely, Oregonians with representation are much more likely to win relief, preventing deportation. In 2016, the Portland Immigration Court issued decisions in 281 unrepresented cases. 233, or 87%, resulted in deportation, whereas represented cases, only 29% of issued decisions resulted in deportation. The community value of representation provided for Oregonians is significant. We urge the city to follow neighboring jurisdictions like the city of Portland and Los Angeles that created and funded a universal representation model similar to what Portland's immigrant legal service providers have created. To address Portland's unmet representation need, Oregon Ready convened ICS, Catholic Charities, MPD, SOAR, Innovation Law Lab, CALSA, and Lewis and Clark Law School. The collective met multiple times and researched various models across the U.S. The collaborative conducted a number of site visits and formed interviews from programs located here in the Northwest and East Coast cities like Atlanta and New York City. Our proposed representation model for Portland contains four key elements. The first piece is legal defenders. This is essentially the core component of the model. It's a collaborative focus consisting of dedicated attorneys housed at established immigration legal service nonprofits that represent Oregonians at risk of deportation. The second piece consists of navigators. These are trained volunteers and staff placed in community organizations that will identify and lead potential cases through the network services. The third piece is a centralized clearinghouse. This consists of a variety of tools to screen clients, provide research and data, and technical assistance to support its network and legal immigrant service providers. And the fourth and final piece is a case cost fund. This fund would cover costs for such things like psychological evaluations, translation services, and other case cost needs. The universal representation model enforces collaboration across the rights infrastructure. The model reduces overall costs and minimizes implementation gaps. More importantly, it's easy to scale up to ensure Oregonians have fair and effective representation. Before I relinquish my time to Stephen Manning here today, I must thank Commissioner Udaly for convening this task force and committing to $750,000 to this endeavor. Mayor Willer for showing empathy during this time of urgency, and Commissioner Fritz, Commissioner Fish, Commissioner Salzman for supporting this work before you today. Lastly, I must thank the task force participants who worked quickly and diligently on this recommendation and others. To the volunteers and staff who helped initiate and organize this work, your commitment and energy was noticed. Moving forward, Stephen will address scaling and how the universal representation model will serve Oregonians here in Portland. We look forward to a council work session to discuss the finer details of this project soon. Thank you.
Thank you. There is a PowerPoint is there possible to have that PowerPoint?
Carla is our resident genius on PowerPoint.
Thank you.
She works miracles.
Awesome. Thank you. Great. Mayor, commissioners, members of the New Portlander Committee, members of the task force, my name is Stephen Manning. I'm an attorney. I am the executive director of the Innovation Law Lab, which is a nonprofit here in Portland. We like to think of ourselves as law architects and data empiricists. So we use technology, collaboration, data, litigation to defend the rule of law for immigrants and refugees so that every case that should win does win every time, everywhere. We have collaborated and designed and support two of the nation's largest pro bono initiatives, one in collaboration with several of nationwide immigrant rights organizations called the Dilley Pro Bono Project, which has represented upwards of 50,000 asylum seekers in the last 4 years with a 98% success rate. We are also the designers and the collaborators on the Southeast Immigrant Freedom Initiative. We work with the Southern Poverty Law Center and will soon be one of the world's largest immigrant defense systems based at a detention center. We operate pro bono projects called Centers of Excellence in Atlanta, Charlotte, Kansas City, and here in Portland, where we've trained more than 150 lawyers from some of our city's largest law firms and small firms. We're a member of Oregon Ready, and we've designed the rights architecture for Oregon, which is intended to build a permanent pathway for immigrant inclusion, particularly immigrants of color here in Oregon. And I'd like to describe the rights architecture. Hold it there for a second. This holistic approach about our entire service ecosystem. As the really extremely powerful testimony has shown today, that Oregon is an immigrant state and that our immigrant communities contribute to our collective prosperity. But that collective prosperity is definitely, as we've heard, under attack through what the mass deportation and mass incarceration that is taking place. Through both unjust, so deportations that where they violate the substantive law, and deportations that are unfair because of the asymmetrical nature of deportation, because as has been as you have heard, there is no right to the individuals frequently appear unrepresented in the removal process. As my colleague Roberta just described, the vast increase in arrests in 2017 is actually pretty remarkable. And then one of the biggest things, as Roberta just described, is providing a lawyer is one of the single most, it correlates, providing someone a lawyer creates rule of law faster and more effectively than almost anything else in the system to date. So we know, as Roberta describes, an individual with a lawyer in the Portland court is substantially more likely to prevail and prevent an unjust or unfair deportation. Nationwide, that has shown that 84% of individuals who are represented during the removal proceeding also can defeat an unjust or an unfair removal. And then could you go, keep going. I'd like to describe the rights architecture. So the rights architecture is this holistic approach to our entire service ecosystem here in Oregon. The idea behind the rights architecture is this open, transparent, and deeply visible way of organizing what we do in Oregon to create this permanent pathway to immigrant inclusion. It begins with prevention and education. This is where organizations on the ground in the field do Know Your Rights work, Beyond Know Your Rights work, family safety planning, affirmative intervention to minimize deportation risk. And we know empirically that more than 80% of immigration arrests, 80% of immigration arrests are constitutionally doubtful. That is, that they violate the Fourth or Fifth Amendment. We know this happens with great regularity because we cannot achieve redressability or accountability in the system, because here's what happens, right? So even though individuals, we train individuals, like, so there's an amazing coalition of organizations working in Portland, in the county, and across the state, have mobilized to engage in Know Your Rights work. But we know when we do that Know Your Rights work, individuals, their rights will be violated. So we've now begun teaching individuals what to do when your rights are violated, what we call Know Your Rights, Beyond Know Your Rights. But what happens is people give up in the process, and they give up for two basic reasons. So one, they know that they're going to get arrested and detained, and that their family is going to suffer a great deal during that detention period, and that they're not going to get a lawyer because most individuals will appear without a lawyer. And without a lawyer, the likelihood of winning is small. And so people give up early in the process, so we cannot complete the circle. So in this diagram before you, zone one is prevention and education. The recommendations in the task force today are going to help tie zone one with zone three, family safety, moving individuals and providing protection with families, with zone four, universal representation and closing a gap. The rights architecture was designed and is being implemented to close that gap, to create accountability so that the Fourth and Fifth Amendment lives in real time. And that I would say to our Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, that that actually is the rule of law. The universal representation model that is proposed today in the recommendations of the task force is a critical component of the rights architecture. So here and without it, the circle cannot be completed, right? So Oregon has one of the best private immigration defense bars in the nation. But it's not enough, right? Our capacity is not enough, right? We have an amazing array of pro bono services through the Center of Excellence at the Law Lab, through the work Chapone does with the American Immigration Lawyers Association here in Portland. We rely on some of the largest law firms here in the city. It's not enough, right? Universal representation as proposed in the task force report completes the gap. So the model synthesizes several successful components of projects that we use around the nation, as well as during our studies of what happens in the New York, the Knife Up Project, so the New York Immigrant Family Unity Project, the California, the LA Justice Fund, as well as the Seattle representation program. The systems we're proposing scales in a dynamic way, so that we think after 3 years we should be able to achieve universality. So that means the system would achieve scale, where we would be able to prevent nearly every unjust or unfair deportation that would occur here at the Portland Immigration Court. And with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Moreno.
Thank you. Mayor, esteemed commissioners, my name is Alberto Moreno, and I am the chair for the Commission on Hispanic Affairs. In that role, I am charged with representing the needs of Latinos in Oregon, who now number 500,000 strong. I wanted to take this opportunity to thank you for your leadership in making Portland a sanctuary city for our immigrant and refugee communities who live, pray, and work in this august city. Every day, as you have heard, across this great nation of ours, across this great state, our communities are being hunted down, hunted in our courthouses, in our hospitals, in our schools, and even in the sacrosanct space of our private homes. Men in black descend under the cover of night, knocking down our doors, scooping up our parents, tearing in one fell swoop the delicate, sacred fabric of our families uprooted here. And so we are here before you at this indecorous moment in history to ask you to make material your promise of Portland is sanctuary, to make of this city that safe harbor, that bright beacon upon the distant promontory. This task force has worked hard, as you heard, to put together a list of recommendations that would lead us to a cogent response in the face of that action. The recommendations, the thoughtful recommendations, are as follow. We respectfully request that a deportation defense fund be established and seated with sufficient resources to ensure robust representation of individuals who are the subject of any immigration action. Additionally, we are also asking that the City of Portland commit resources and staffing to establish an independent Office of Immigrant Support. This office is essential to creating a welcoming, inclusive city where our children and families can feel safe. The Office of Immigrant Support would provide and manage the grants to be awarded to community-based organizations who would in turn provide independent representation in deportation or removal proceedings. That piece is important as we seek to provide political and legal protection for the city. The office would also ensure coordination between city, county, state, and federal agencies to ensure a cogent response in the face of immigration enforcement action. And this office would also work to leverage additional investments and funding to ensure the long-term viability of this program. Further, the task force agrees that political and social support from city officials is crucial to the success of any programs enacted to protect and support immigrant and refugee communities. Accordingly, the task force further recommends the following: that elected city officials act as liaisons between federal agencies and community members with grievances, that the city works and coordinates with county, state, and federal agencies and offices, as well as nonprofits and community organizations to support and protect immigrant and refugee communities. And finally, the fourth recommendation is that the city adopt and internalize task force recommendations into city policies, that the city appoints and empowers an independent city public ombudsman for redress and accountability in implementing the task force recommendations, and that the city authorize the current task force to develop the membership criteria for a new task force that would oversee the implementation of the recommendations as set forth in this report. We urge you today to adopt these recommendations as we live out our support to the most vulnerable among us. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Question? Is this the right time?
Yeah, sure. Commissioner Saltzman.
This is the last panel. We do have some invited testimony, but if you have a question for the panel, please.
I guess I'm a little confused because, there's a lot to absorb here. And thank you for all the work that you've done. But I guess trying to understand the representation in the immigration or in deportation process. So I thought I heard Mr. Gutierrez say that representation is recognized as a matter of right by federal judges and others. Is that correct? Because I'm hearing that people are not afforded automatically representation. So I'm trying to reconcile those two statements.
There's two rights that an individual has basically when someone appears in removal proceedings or deportation proceedings. So an individual has his or her Fifth Amendment right to due process, and as part of that due process right, that would include an individual bringing his or her own attorney, but not an attorney provided for by the government. So if an individual is indigent or an individual is unable to afford an attorney, or if they could afford an attorney but there are no attorneys available or the capacity for the local legal system is complete or full, then that individual would have to defend him or herself. There's also a statutory phrase which is being litigated at this moment, what it may mean in the Immigration Nationality Act that refers to, that says an individual may be represented by counsel at no expense to the federal government. And what that means is right now in the federal courts.
Okay, and then thanks. And I guess the other question, so we're talking about representation for people in deportation proceedings. We're not talking about representation for people in criminal proceedings. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Because they're provided with representation in that case.
Right, that's correct.
Correct.
Okay. Thanks.
So I have a question, too, if I could, to our immigration lawyer. There's so many restrictions that have been placed on what federal legal services lawyers can do that I'm sort of out of date. Can someone at Oregon Legal Aid Services provide the services that we're talking about here to a qualified party? Does federal law allow people funded by legal services to provide these services?
Yes and no. So if they are an Oregon, or if they're a member of the American Immigration Lawyer Association and they work in one of the nonprofits, they would have a better understanding of it. But just like in any practice of law, the area of immigration is very complex. even under immigration law, as immigration attorneys, not all of us work in deportation and removal.
Right.
So a family, it would be very hard for Oregon Law Center or legal aid who works under like family law or very specific custody battles or elder law to jump in from that area to do a very complex litigation.
So, but just curious, are there lawyers funded federally that do this work at Oregon Legal Aid Services, or is this separate from the suite of services that are currently being offered?
What we're requesting is something completely separate.
No, I understand, but I want to go back to my question. Currently, are there lawyers federally funded that do this work through Oregon Legal Aid Services?
Not that I know of. Stephen, do you have an answer for that?
So Oregon Legal Aid, they're precluded from providing any kind of immigration, like sort of representational service.
That's what
like
I
this.
Assumed. I mean, every time right. they get into interesting areas, Congress slaps them down. So,
that's right. Oregon Law Center is their sister organization, separate organization,
funding.
Right? It is not within, so there are members, Oregon Law Center, members of the Oregon Law Center, actually member of Oregon Ready, who have put forth part of this proposal.
Right.
And they are active participants as well, and they do not provide removal or deportation defense
okay,
services.
Okay, good. That's what I need to know. Mm-hmm. Thank you
yes.
very much.
Anyone else? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, now we're going to move on to the invited testimony segment. If I could have Luz Reyna from Congressman Earl Blumenauer's office, Kofi Dessa, the Director of Office of Equity and Human Rights, and Andrea Williams, Executive Director of CASA, come to the table. So I'm going to ask you or remind you all to state your name for the record, and please limit your testimony to 2 to 3 minutes. Okay. Thank you and welcome.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Luz Reyna. I'm here on behalf of Congressman Blumenauer. First, I want to thank the Commission and everyone involved for putting forth these recommendations. Now more than ever, we are grateful for those in our community who have stepped up to protect the thousands of families who now call Portland home. Our city, our country, are at their best when we prioritize inclusivity. No matter one's national origin, race, religion, or immigration status, every single one of us contributes to the vibrancy and diversity of our city, and it is a critical part of the fabric of our community. In light of this administration's hateful and anti-immigrant agenda, putting the Sanctuary City Resolution into action is all the most important. We still may see the federal government choose to undermine safety and instill fear, but our city will not cave under this pressure. We will do everything in our power to keep our communities together. We cannot and will not turn our backs on our city's most vulnerable. While I continue to fight against the divisive policies we're seeing at the national level, I'm incredibly heartened to know that Oregonians will continue to fight at home. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. My name is Kofi Dessou, Interim Director of the Office of Equity and Human Rights, City of Portland. Mayor Wheeler, Commissioners, thank you for creating the opportunity for community members to work closely with the City of Portland to provide these recommendations to you. As an immigrant myself, I want to remind you that we are here in Portland, in Oregon, to participate in the prosperity of this state and this country. And we are working hard, our communities are working hard to contribute to this prosperity. And providing a structure to support immigrants is a testimony of the welcoming character that Oregon shows to us, that was attracted us to come to Oregon and to reside in Oregon. So I want to show my support. Am I too close? Yeah. I want to show my support to these recommendations from the Office of Equity and Human Rights, but also as a personal interest because of my immigrant status. Another thing I want to highlight is that these issues are not new. They are not new. They are highlighted, they are elevated now, and having a permanent structure that will continue to support will help us to avoid being reactive when something happens. So I'm going to stop there. Thank you for the opportunity.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify. My name is Andrea Williams. I'm the Executive Director of CAUSA. We are an immigrant rights organization here in Portland, and we also advocate at the state and national levels. And we're also a member of Oregon Ready. I want to just say, you know, thank you so much for your leadership. I know how proud you are of being a sanctuary state. I've heard many of you on the radio making the case and defending our law that restricts city resources and personnel from engaging in federal immigration law. And Oregon is a sanctuary state. We are the oldest sanctuary state in the nation. In case you didn't know it, passed in July of 1987. And despite that, unfortunately, our families are continuing to suffer very greatly. It feels like every single week I get a phone call, a Facebook message, an email, a frantic phone call from a mom or a sister or a kid because their loved one has been picked up by ICE and they don't know what to do. And frankly, sometimes I don't know what to do. And it's a really disheartening situation. We have amazing lawyers that are working pro bono, but as you've heard, it's not enough, and we face a huge gap in legal representation. It can cost families thousands of dollars, and we're talking about farm workers, we're talking about restaurant workers, low-income people, and they're suddenly having to pay $20,000, $30,000 in bond, let alone the legal representation when they come back to Portland if they get let off on bond. I know families who have scrambled to get the money together, and some of them have had to give up paying rent. They've had to go to food pantries, and in some cases, many nonprofits here in the Portland area have stepped up and helped provide emergency funds, including ourselves. But we can't address the current scale of people who are being detained by ourselves. And so we're here supporting these recommendations, and in particular, the universal representation proposal that would provide the representation our families need. And while the city can't physically stop ICE, right, from detaining somebody, we know that, but the city can provide the legal defense we need to fight back and make our case for why our family should stay together. And so I see this universal representation proposal as a step towards strengthening our sanctuary status, making it live even more than it does, and address the current crisis we see ourselves in. So my ask is that we join our neighbors up in Washington, King County, Tacoma, who are implementing a similar program. Even though we're the oldest sanctuary city or sanctuary state on the West Coast, we are currently the only state with no deportation defense program. And so, I love my state and I love this city, but unfortunately we're behind. Seattle, Tacoma, LA, San Francisco, they all have these programs. And yet we've had our sanctuary policies for longer. So I think we can do better. And so I want to say thank you to Commissioner Udaly for your leadership and your commitment. And we look forward to continuing to work together. So thank you.
A question from Ms. Williams.
Commissioner Fritz.
Is there any discussion of having this funded at the state level? Because, when we were doing our stopgap measures to fund some of the defense that we've done, there was the question of making sure that it was Portland DACA students who were recipients, and yet we're a region, we're a state. So what's the discussion of funding this at the state level?
So there have been conversations with the governor, and as you know, that process moves very slowly. We're about to head into a long legislative session next year. So the idea has been brought up. However, our sort of way of looking at this is if we can be successful on a smaller scale at a city or county level, we can make a stronger case for the state to invest. So I think it's got to be a local state partnership. And just for some perspective, there is no other state in the nation that I'm aware of that has a statewide fund for deportation defense. California has a grant process to support legal service providers to help people apply for citizenship and for DACA, but they don't have it, at least currently to my awareness, at the statewide level. So what we would be doing with the state would be unprecedented, and so I think we need to be able to prove ourselves that this model works here first before we scale it up even greater at the state level.
If we, the state was, we were the first state, then maybe we can be the first state to fund it as well.
That would be great. And we'll continue to have those conversations with the governor and other legislators. But
well,
in the meantime,
I particularly liked recommendation number 3 about the elected officials' responsibility to act as liaisons between the local jurisdictions and with our state and federal representatives. And we have done that on the council, certainly we'll continue to do that. How about other jurisdictions? Has there been any discussion with the county, with Beaverton? You know, this, again, is a
We're
a community problem. It's not just a Portland problem.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we are, have been in some deep conversations with Multnomah County. We've been talking to Chair Kefouri, Commissioner Vega Peterson, and other commissioners at the same time that we have been talking with you all, and ideally it would be a partnership between the city and the county, which holds the greatest number of immigrants in the state numerically. And then I think the discussion's open for other counties and cities that may want to participate. We figured we would start here because it's the county that has the largest number of immigrants. It's home to the Portland Immigration Court, and we have one of the most progressive city councils and county councils in the state. So we thought we would try to start where we could get momentum and bring people along as we go. That was sort of the line of thinking. But yes, we are in conversation with Multnomah County as well.
That's helpful to know, and I will certainly commit to talking with the Metro Policy Advisory Committee, which I'm the city's representative on. It seems to me that Washington County, with the farm workers in particular being such a core part of their economy, might be interested in joining us.
We would definitely welcome the help in developing those conversations and those relationships in Washington County.
I agree that this should be a regional conversation, and that's where we were looking before Ready Oregon's initiative came to our attention. So all three counties have declared our sanctuary status, and Beaverton has declared sanctuary status. But given that Portland and Multnomah County have the largest numbers of people that need this type of support, it makes sense to me to start there.
Commissioner Udaly?
Thank you.
Udaly just said, would somebody tell the folks at home what is Ready Oregon?
So Oregon Ready is a Oregon Ready is a collaboration, a coalition between nonprofit legal service providers, community advocates, unions. In some cases, some of the local government agencies have been involved. And we really got together when DACA was established to create better coordination and collaboration in making sure as many DACA recipients could gain status as possible. Over the years, we've shifted and we've become statewide recently in order to address the crisis of increased immigration enforcement in our state. And really what we're trying to do is create a cross-sector collaborative where immigration attorneys and community advocates on the ground are creating solutions together instead of being in silos. And that's part of what Stephen Manning was showing to you. The rights infrastructure is our strategy in order to address the current immigration enforcement activity we're seeing in Oregon.
Thank you.
So, Commissioner Udaly, I just have a question. Just to understand procedurally where we're going, today we're being asked to accept a report.
Correct.
I heard someone say there may be a work session in the future.
I'm going to request that we have a work session on universal defense.
Okay. And then it would be your intention to, through the budget process, to make the ask for both the for the recommendations that you choose to act on this year?
Yes. And I was going to clarify that at the end, just because I know that some of these processes must seem a little arcane, but today we are here to simply accept the report. That doesn't mean that we are adopting and implementing recommendations. That is a separate process that will come next.
But there will be other, the next opportunities will be the work presumably a work session to flush out some details, and then a conversation during the budget process about whether to establish a program and at what level of funding.
Yes.
And there'll be plenty of opportunities in those portions for public testimony and involvement.
Absolutely.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. We're going to bring up,
thank you very much. Great testimony. Thank you.
We're going to now have Leland Baxter from Metropolitan Public Defender's Office, John Herrera from Catholic Charities, and Robert Brown from Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice. And again, just state your name for the record, and please limit your testimony to 2 to 3 minutes. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, commissioners. Thank you so much for having us. It's an honor to be here with so many dedicated and immigrant rights advocates, folks who I've looked up to and learned from for years in my own work. I work at Metropolitan Public Defender in Immigrant Defense, Oregon, which is a removal defense-focused project that was launched last year, thanks in part to the generous funding from the city. Us, along with Catholic Charities, are two of the first nonprofits to launch removal defense projects. I'm here to urge you to seriously consider the removal defense funding for a couple of different reasons. Oregon and Portland sanctuary policies in many ways protect immigrant communities, but we have also seen that they've put immigrant communities at a heightened risk as the Trump administration, Jeff Sessions, target jurisdictions for escalated enforcement. Representation in that context is absolutely critical, and I believe it's an obligation for us as communities that wish to be sanctuary communities to provide representation. As we've heard, a lawyer or the lack thereof is the difference between an individual actually even applying for relief from deportation for which they may be eligible. The statistics that Metropolitan Public Defender requested last year from the immigration court show that when folks are unrepresented, about 83% of the time they're deported. When they have lawyers, that number drops significantly to somewhere in the 20s, and they prevail on forms of relief. With attorneys, about 44% of the time, if they don't have an attorney, they'll actually prevail maybe less than 3% of the time. What those numbers show us is that Oregonians who have a lawful right to be here in the United States are being deported every single day, perhaps by the hundreds every year. I urge you to take this to heart. We know that undocumented individuals in Oregon pay about $80 million in state and local taxes. And then we know that if those individuals had lawful status, that would grow to about $130 million. That in no means is the reason why we should adopt this, right? The value of our immigrant communities should never be reduced to their economic output. But it shows that this is not only the moral thing to do, but it makes financial sense for the city, for the county, and for the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Could I ask a question on that point?
Yeah.
Because you've made a good case, and I would expect that from a good attorney. And you've even turned the frame a little bit right back on us, which is an interesting... I wouldn't want to go up against you in court, in other words. Obviously, funding is an issue here, and that's a little bit of the elephant in the room, because we know the city is actually in a cut budget process. And so as we seek to find ways to support the good work of this commission, we're going to have to weigh that against the reality that we've got a tough budget process coming up. Is there a way for us to be more creative and more innovative on the financial structure here? Is there an opportunity around mainstream law firms, philanthropic organizations, private sector organizations that benefit from our immigrant community? Is there some way to cast a wider net here? Has that been considered as one strategy, or could that be considered as a strategy as the city enters its budget process?
So there's a couple of things. One, the strategy of bringing in private law firms is something that's been pursued. Stephen Manning kind of touched on that with his Centers of Excellence. And with limited amount of time, I don't think he was able to get into really in-depth what that entails. But the Center of Excellence draws in pro bono attorneys from major law firms around the city to assist. But it's simply insufficient in the face of the amount of need that we're busy, you know, big law firm attorneys able to fit in cases in their pro bono space simply isn't the type of representation that we truly need at Portland's Immigration Court.
I want to be a little more blunt. I wasn't actually talking about pro bono work, although I'm really grateful for the pro bono services that are provided. I was actually talking about dollars and cents contributions. Absolutely.
So I believe that with an investment from the city and perhaps an investment from the county as well, it demonstrates to the private sector that this is, right, with that kind of seed money can absolutely be leveraged. And I do think there's a place and a responsibility for businesses that benefit from immigrant labor, that benefit from being in a community that's pro-immigrant. But I think there's outreach still to be done in that area. I think it should be done. But I also think that we're here today in response to the task force's recommendations, and I do think they recognize that there's an important role for a city council that has historically been so pro-immigrant to play with this with universal representation.
Excellent. Thanks. And I do appreciate your testimony. Thanks a lot. It was good.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and dear commissioners. My name is John Herrera. I'm the director of the Immigration Legal Services Program at Catholic Charities. And we're here today to put a support to this universal representation. And I want to take a little bit on what you just said, Mr. Mayor, about this being an effort that has to be in conjunction with many sectors, but including the public, starting with your office and your budget. That's why we're asking to start putting the first dollars. And we're asking also, there's been a proposal to local foundations, and also we're asking also the governor's office to join this effort, because this is not an issue of City of Portland itself. This is an issue of Portland, Oregon, as we are representing Oregonians here. But we need to start with something concrete, and that's the ask today is to you to consider that families are being separated daily in a matter of time. So that's the ask is to you to consider when you go into the process of the budgeting is to have some money allocated to start this process of keeping families together. And the only way to keep families together is to have attorneys defending them in court. There is no way to an immigrant that is barely speaking the language to face all the force that is being brought by the government to deport them. So there is no way that someone can defend their cases without the help of an attorney. So that's the ask today, is to really encourage you to take this leadership on being the first city around the state to put some money toward the defense for the universal representation. Would mean universal representation mean families together. That's our ask. And also thanking you all for being a proud figure serving the city of Portland, but also telling the community that we are here and that you support us, the immigrants, not only with resolution, but with some concrete action saying, here is some money that you can go and have an attorney that is willing to keep your family here united.
Thank you. And that was a very strong statement, and I appreciate it. And I'm still going to see if I can't think of some creative ways to leverage public resources with private philanthropy.
Definitely,
there might be some good ideas in this room that we could think of together.
We're happy to put every single word along with you and go and ask for those dollars.
Delighted to hear that. Thank you.
Before we move on, I do think it would be helpful. ICE is not exactly the most transparent or willing to share their data with us. We have a sense of how many families are at risk, but do we have a sense in the last year or two of the number of people who have been detained and or deported in our area?
So For the city of Portland, so what we do have is some law students who are here. Lindsay Johnson and Teresa Smith have been doing work on this, and they have gathered some data. So what we know is that there's nearly 4,000 individuals in removal proceedings who have Oregon addresses. We know that that number actually undercounts because a good number of individuals who are detained in Tacoma have their address listed as that detention center. We also know from that same data set that for individuals who have Multnomah County addresses, there's about 814 individuals with Multnomah County addresses who are in removal proceedings. I'll just note that that's a growth of about 10% over 6 months. So if it continues at that clip, that's going to be growing, you know, significantly. Washington County is the most represented in removal proceedings, and there's about 940 individuals with Washington County addresses who are currently in removal proceedings. So between Multnomah and Washington County, it's well over, right, almost 2,000.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Robert Brown. I work with the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice. The acronym that we use for that is EMERGE, I-M-I-R-J, so that's how I'll say it because it's a lot easier. EMERGE is an organization of people of faith and conscience that supports the immigrant community and works with the immigrant community in their, to help solve their needs. Last year, we were an organization of about 25 congregations and in the Portland area, and now we are an organization of over 100 congregations throughout the state. So you can understand that there is a big need and there's a big desire for faith communities to be working on this issue of sanctuary. We have had multiple trainings, and we are working directly with faith communities and having them understand what the sanctuary needs are. I'm going to talk to you about the needs from a different perspective, the needs for representation. In EMERGE, we have a working group that works on accompaniment. So we send people to accompany people to ICE check-ins, to court cases as needed, along with the ACLU, who provides legal observer kind of services. We just completed a survey in EMERGE of about 20 different organizations that represent the immigrant community. And we asked them, what do you need? What kind of accompaniment, what kind of support do you need? And the first thing that, when we looked at the data, we just looked at it yesterday, as a matter of fact, the data really was very clearly stated that what's needed from the community is legal help. People feel, individuals feel, families feel isolated and helpless, and that's no way for our community to be. The second thing that people needed was housing, and the third thing that people needed was money, because when people get picked up by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, then usually many times the breadwinner of the family is taken away and the rest of the family is left with trying to maintain. So I just wanted to let you know from what does the community want, the community need, is really for legal representation. So I hope that you will take very seriously the recommendations of the task force that worked on this. You mentioned about working on state kind of issues. We do have connections all across the state in various communities, and it'd be interesting to have these conversations in Bend and in Hood River also with those people. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
One question of the attorneys, maybe. So if we were to move forward with this proposal, would it be expected that any participating attorneys would agree on a uniform billing rate, hourly billing?
Oh, I believe the idea would be to bill the city?
Right.
Or to bill the clients? I believe the representation would be free.
If the city's paying the bill, yeah.
Right, no, and I believe the model that we're currently proposing is not an hourly billed rate. It's an annual FTE, right? So we pay, the city would pay for a number of attorneys, or the city and the county, really, or the city, the county, and private partners. would pay for a certain number of attorneys. Those attorneys would be housed. Those attorneys would work close to full time in simply representing individuals. We've worked out case caps for the first year, the second year, and the third year, which would increase. Those case caps are kind of pushed higher thanks to the technical support team that's based in the clearinghouse, which was kind of referenced. So the idea is actually to avoid an hourly billing type situation because there are significant issues with how that relates to the quality of representation at times, especially under this type of model. And the best thing, right, is to have individuals who are dedicated and are working as hard as they can for all of their clients.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. So before I call the next and final four people up for testimony, I know we're going to lose Commissioner Fish and Commissioner Saltzman around 4 p.m., and I just want to get a sense of what you would like to do. I think they would both like to be here for the vote, I want to hear from the final four.
Well, is the next panel about a 10-minute panel?
We could make it a 10-minute panel, I think. Okay. All right.
Yeah, I have to leave it for, we're accepting a report. That's a fairly innocuous thing, so whether I'm actually here for that vote or not is...
Okay. All right.
Not that big a deal for me.
Just want to check in.
Okay.
All right.
But I would vote to accept it if I'm here.
Well, would it be appropriate for Commissioners Fish and Saltzman to make some comments before our final four?
I'm gonna stay until the vote.
Okay. All right. Karina Ramos, Reverend Mark Knutson from Augustus. I didn't say that right. Augustana.
Augustana.
Hey, it's on my street and everything. Linda Jaramillo? Jaramillo? Is it? Did I get it close?
Jaramillo.
Oh, okay. Well, I can't say it
Thank
fancy
you
like you. And we have the interpreter. Okay.
Yes.
Great. And everyone, just state your name for the record, and if you could tighten your testimony to 2 to 3 minutes, that would
Got
be
it.
Very helpful.
Hola, buenas tardes. Mi nombre es Karina Letran Ramos. Soy migrante de El Salvador.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Karina Ramos. I'm an immigrant from El Salvador.
Can you move the microphone a little bit closer between the two of you so that...
Yeah.
Oh, you've got... I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's fine.
You're ahead of me. No, I'm sorry.
No problem. Say it again.
Mi nombre es Karina Letran Ramos y nací en El Salvador.
My name is Karina Letrano Ramos and I was born in El Salvador.
Tengo dos hijas de 15 y 17 años de edad.
I have two daughters, 15 and 17 years old.
Que aún están en mi país a pesar de los riesgos que corren.
They're still in my country even though the risks that they run.
El 18 de febrero de 1914, la Fuerza Armada de El Salvador desapareció a mi hermano menor.
18th of February of 2014, the armed forces of El Salvador disappeared my brother, made him disappear.
Su nombre es Francisco Javier Hernández. Ellos desaparecieron a mi hermano y a dos jóvenes más.
His name is Francisco Javier Hernández. He was made to disappear and two other young people.
Se buscó con la ayuda de la Policía Nacional, Fiscalía General de la República y Derechos Humanos.
He was looked, we looked for him through the, pardon?
Ayuda de la Policía.
The help of the National Police, the Mayor's Office, and the General Republic of Human Rights, sorry.
Hicimos todas las denuncias permitidas en mi país, pero lastimosamente, como se trataba de una entidad pública, no encontramos respuesta.
We made all the denouncements of the entities, but since it was related to a public entity, we just couldn't find any answers.
Como es conocido, en El Salvador está pasando hay mucho involucramiento de pandillas y maras. Pero en mi caso de mi familia fue las autoridades del país las que desaparecieron a mi hermano.
How is well known in my country, there's an issue with gangs and maras, but with But in my case, it was the policía, the national police that made it disappear.
Mi familia, por haber hecho las denuncias hacia las autoridades del país, han sido objeto de acoso, persecución y muchas amenazas.
My family, since they made the denouncements, they've been persecuted by threats.
Lastimosamente fue el primer caso que se denunció después de los acuerdos de paz que firmó el país entre el gobierno y las fuerzas del Frente Farabundo Martí.
Unfortunately, that was the first. ¿Me pueden enseñar, por favor? Unfortunately, that was the first announcement of after the accord of peace between the government and the.
La izquierda se llama, la izquierda del país.
No, ¿me puede enseñar, perdón? Por favor.
Después de lo que se realizó después de los acuerdos de paz.
Sí, se desapareció. Between the armed forces and the, up to the accord of the peace. Yeah.
Esto es una breve, una historia de lo que, un poco de lo que a mí me sucedió. Y debido a eso, mi madre y yo tuvimos que salir del país para salvaguardar nuestra vida.
That's a brief history of what happened to me, and because of that, me and my mother, we had to leave the country to save our lives.
Llegamos a Estados Unidos en busca de apoyo internacional para poder continuar la búsqueda de mi hermano.
We came to the United States in search of international help to continue to look for my brother, the help to look for my brother.
Mi madre y yo llegamos a Oregon el 26 de febrero del 2016 y desde entonces hemos vivido en este lugar.
My mother and I, we came to Oregon on February 26th and they came, pardon?
El 2016.
Since 2006 and since then we've lived in this place, in this country.
Desde el cual estamos solicitando un proceso de asilo. Desde esa fecha, gracias a Dios, sigue el proceso, pero debido a la situación que hemos tenido en mi familia, tuvimos que sacar también a mi hermano Emmanuel de Jesús Ramos del país en el 2016, en noviembre del 2016, perdón.
Since then, we've been looking for, we've been in the process of asylum, and thank goodness for that. And since, because of that, since 2006, we also had to do the same for my brother.
Mi hermano Emmanuel de Jesús actualmente, intentó cruzar la frontera para salvaguardar su vida también, pero ahora lo detuvo inmigración.
My brother Emmanuel Jesús, he tried to cross the border to save his life, but unfortunately he was detained by immigration.
Está desde noviembre del 2017 está detenido y actualmente ya tuvo su corte de fianza. Y le han puesto $20,000 para poder salir con fianza.
Since then, he has had his hearing. They imposed $20,000 bail hearing for him.
Lo cual es una cantidad imposible de pagar para nosotros como familia.
And that's an impossible amount for us to pay as a family.
Como ustedes pueden ver, en diciembre del 2017 me caí, me quebré la mano, lo cual ha imposibilitado que yo cubra que trabaje al 100% para poder cubrir todos mis gastos.
Since you can see, since December 2017, I fell and broke my hand. That's impaired me from working and paying all the charges.
Actualmente, con la intervención de la Comisión Interamericana, se ha reabierto el caso de la desaparición de mi hermano Francisco Javier.
With their national help, the case of my brother Javier has been able to be reopened.
Y lo cual esperamos, obtener respuestas después de 4 años, ¿verdad?
And we hope to have some answers after 4 years.
Esto significa mayor riesgo para mi familia, especialmente para mi hermano Emmanuel de Jesús Ramos, si es deportado a El Salvador nuevamente.
This means a higher risk for my family and more for my brother if he is deported back to El Salvador.
traigo acá este caso, pues porque he escuchado mucho de lo que se habla de los inmigrantes, ¿verdad? De que somos una población muy alta en este estado.
I have brought this to attention because I've heard the stories that immigrants were a high number of immigrants in the state.
Y esto es un poco de lo que afecta a la comunidad inmigrante realmente, pues como soy la única proveedora de mi familia, lastimosamente ha sido algo muy devastador para todos.
This is something that impacts immigrant communities, and since I am proud of my family, this is something that impacts us all.
Quizás nosotros los inmigrantes lo que esperamos es un poco de apoyo nada más y que nos abran las puertas para poder trabajar y hacer lo mejor que podemos también acá en su país. Gracias.
Maybe as immigrants are asking for you guys to help and support.